Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for joining me today. If you missed hour one, you definitely want to go back. I had Dr. Mark Muska in. We have a segment called Ask the Professor. I think I'm going to change that segment to Hey Mark. I think that's a little bit easier because he's a professor, but he doesn't have suede elbow patches or anything. So he's a really approachable guy, and the questions were great. And all the listeners that wrote in or called with questions really made the hour fantastic. Great variety of questions. And I do recommend, if you love hearing great insight to tough biblical questions, to go back, go to myfaithradio.com, check out that hour with Dr. Mark Muska. Okay, this hour, these shows are just so awesome. And coming up in this hour, I have Abby Johnson, and she is she's really quite passionate about the pro-life movement. And ironically, she used to work at a Planned Parenthood facility. Do I say that right? Is it facility? Yeah. And she's written a book called Unplanned. And now there's a movie coming out about her life and her story. And we're going to chat with her in just a few minutes. And then Rob Bluey, my Washington, D.C. correspondent, I think he's broadcasting from home today because I think the storm is hitting Washington as well. There's just tough weather out there. About everywhere. So we'll take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to have Abby Johnson join us. Can hardly wait.
You have a story that needs to be shared. Learn from fiction and nonfiction authors and publishing experts. Make meaningful connections with industry professionals and receive valuable feedback about your writing during a one-on-one appointment with an editor, agent, or author. Get your ticket for the 2019 Northwestern Christian Writers Conference, July 12th and 13th. Tickets are on sale now. And for the month of January, get 20% off the full ticket price. Register online today at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com.
Hello, I'm Alistair Begg from Truth For Life, and on behalf of our staff and volunteers, congratulations to Faith Radio on your 70th anniversary. It's our privilege to be one of the Bible-teaching ministries heard on this station. We're so thankful for the staff and for all the listeners faithfully supporting the work of Faith Radio in order to bring relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching to so many for so long. We're grateful to be part of the team. And so once again, our warmest congratulations as you celebrate your 70th birthday.
Thank you for being with me today. It's 7 minutes after the hour. I have Abby Johnson on our studio line. She's really passionate about helping women in need, a desire that once led her to work at Planned Parenthood until she saw what abortion truly does. And now she's an outspoken advocate for the pro-life movement. She's with me now. Hello, Abby.
Hi.
Thank you for being on the show. I'm really dying to hear a chunk of your testimony. Can you tell us what it's like to be a former Planned Parenthood clinic director to now basically a nationally recognized voice for life?
Yeah, I got involved with Planned Parenthood when I was in college. I didn't know much about them, but, it was sort of naive, got involved, believed all the talking points that they gave me, and then was there for actually 8 years and became the clinic director of the clinic where I started, and then ended up leaving in 2009 after witnessing a live ultrasound-guided abortion procedure and seeing a 13-week-old baby fight and struggle for his life during that abortion procedure. And I knew then that there was humanity in the womb and that I had to leave. And so I ended up leaving and have just been speaking out about my experiences and talking about what's really happening inside of these abortion clinics and hopefully bringing healing to people who have been affected by abortion.
You said something in the last minute that had just absolutely taken my breath away. And I'm fighting back some tears, and I feel angry, and I feel a little panicked right now. Just the whole description of what you witnessed on the ultrasound abortion just it kind of stops me in my tracks.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, a lot of people, I often say that one of the reasons that abortion is so prevalent in our time is because it's done in secret. You can't actually see what's happening to the baby as it's being killed. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so easy for people to make the decision, because you really don't see the primary victim as it's being harmed.
And that's at 13 weeks you witnessed. And now legislation that got passed in New York says you can go up until, what, it's almost ready to emerge from the birth canal.
Yeah, and there's actually many states that already have that legislation in place. They're just joining a list of about a dozen states that allow abortions up until the date of birth in our country. And we're really behind, actually, as far as that goes. I mean, almost all European countries ban abortion past 12 weeks because of the science behind the human person in the womb. The babies can feel pain because of development. And, you know, here we are aborting babies up until their date of birth.
Mm-hmm. And there was recently, too, the 20-week abortion ban that got overturned in Iowa Supreme Court. Heartbreaking news. Every time I hear that, I go, really?
Yeah, but we've also seen some strides. So we do see some states moving forward with heartbeat legislation, which would ban abortions at the moment that the heartbeat is detectable, which would ban almost all abortions. So we see that moving forward in some states, and hopefully we'll move to the Supreme Court where we will prayerfully receive a favorable ruling.
Mm-hmm. You are also founder of And Then There Were None, which is a ministry designed to help abortion clinic workers who wish to leave the industry. And I guess, is this statistic right? To date, the ministry has helped about 400 workers leave the abortion industry.
Yeah, we're actually up to about 500 now. So we're at 480 workers who have left. And it's just really exciting. We didn't know, you know, if this would be successful at all. It's sort of a hard sell, you know, asking abortion workers to come and join a pro-life group. But God's really blessed us. And it's been really beautiful just to see the transformation of these men and women as they come into full knowledge of who Christ is and make a different decision for their life and a decision to support life instead of destroy it.
Yeah. Abby, I'm going to take a very short break, and then I'm going to try to reconnect. Abby Johnson is my guest. She's a national pro-life advocate. We'll take a very short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Abby Johnson is my guest. She is a national pro-life advocate. Used to work at Planned Parenthood for 8 years, and then had an experience that got her out of that, and now she's helping others do the same. And so far, over 500 workers have left the abortion industry. She's written a book called Unplanned. They're turning it into a movie. How cool is that? But I'm still a little bit stuck, Abby. Let me go back to something where we understand that God knits together in a mother's womb a child, and we know that life begins at conception. And there's others that just don't share that view. How do we better understand their view so we can better talk with them and share the beauty of the life?
You know, I think that we are, I think years ago, even before I left Planned Parenthood, the idea was, well, you know, this is just a blob of tissue. It's just a mass of cells. It's not really a baby. But now we're seeing that 60% of women who have abortions already have children at home. These are already women who have gone through childbirth. They know it's a baby. They've had ultrasounds. Even the majority of people who I know who support abortion will say, well, yes, I know it's a baby. I know it's a human being. I know it's living. But the mother's rights supersede the rights of the child. So the woman has the right to take the life of this child. And I think most women who have abortions, I don't think any of these women are, you know, just excited about having an abortion. The women I know who have had abortions did so because they felt like they had no other choice, which is really why the whole idea of being pro-choice is such a lie. They're out of choices, and so they feel like abortion is all they have left. And so I really feel like, you know, as people of faith and as people who are pro-life, we've sort of entered another time. So it's not really, I don't know that there's anything we can show them and say, look, but this is a life, right? I think they know that. I think that our job now is to really be present with them and to help them understand that there are resources available to help and that we are able to help. You know, we have so many people in the pro-life movement who are ready to be activated and to help women who need help. And so, I mean, just right now, I was just talking over the past 2 days. I've been talking to a woman who was considering abortion. She ended up choosing life. I go to my Facebook page. I say, hey, look, friends in this area. I need this, this, and this for this woman. We have it lined up within 3 hours.
Wow.
So I think that we need to be really engaged and active in our own communities to really, you know, help support women who feel like they have no other choice.
I know, Abby, you were in D.C. for the March for Life. You made it to that, didn't you?
I was, yeah.
How cold was it?
There. You know, it wasn't that bad, actually. I ended up having to take off my heavy jacket at one point in time because I was a little warm.
So all right.
It was surprising. You just never know what the weather is going to be like. Sometimes you're freezing and you can't get warm enough, and then sometimes it's really nice weather. So we had nice weather this year, thank goodness.
Yeah. Can you give me a little recap of that event?
Yeah, the event was great. This year, the theme for the march was Pro-Life is Pro-Science, Unique from Day One.
Love it.
And it's a great theme. You know, we as believers know that science comes from our Creator, and so being able to acknowledge that is beautiful, and it's another way to talk to people. You know, having those scientific arguments in place is another good way to talk to people who, you know, I still encounter people every once in a while who say, well, it's not a human being. And so I say, well, if it's not a human being, then what species is it? Is it a cat? Is it a dog? What is it? You know, so having those scientific points available and ready to use, it really does help other people think, because a lot of people who are pro-choice may not consider themselves Christian or have any sort of faith tradition. And so, you know, being able to talk about abortion from many different ways is an important part of what we need to do.
Isn't it just so intellectually dishonest that they, because everything is in secrecy and in hiding, and it's not a baby, it's just a tissue. Okay, well, I've seen surgery on TV where they're removing tissue from a knee or something, and I'm going, if it's just tissue, why wouldn't they maybe, for educational purposes, put it on TV?
Yeah, you know, it's true. There have been some groups over the years who have tried to get different videos online or on cable TV networks showing different abortion procedures. They're always shot down. In fact,
Because a baby's being murdered.
yeah, exactly. So my movie that's coming out, Unplanned, is currently they're deciding right now if it's going to be rated PG-13 or if it's going to be rated R. And what we're hearing is that it's most likely going to be rated R. And that doesn't really make any sense because you can look at PG-13 movies that are out, all the Marvel comic movies, all those, tons of killing, tons of violence. And those are already PG-13. So why would this get rated an R? It's not that it's really bloody, it's not that it's really graphic, but it shows the killing of an innocent human being in the womb. And it just shows the hypocrisy there. If it's just a blob of tissue, why in the world would you rate this an R?
Right.
But it shows the hypocrisy that we're living in today, where people want to, you know, it's like they want to support it, and one minute they want to say, oh, it's no big deal, it's just tissue. And then on the other hand, they're like, oh, you know, get that out of our face. Nobody should have to see that. Well, why not? I mean, so we sort of see the hypocrisy there.
So I know as the body of Christ, and I think you're doing a phenomenal job connecting people, being there for them, and helping to connect dots. But how do we, as the body of Christ, how can we be part of that solution? Because I know this is an issue that should be at the top of everyone's minds.
Yeah, it really should be. And I'm surprised. I mean, I shouldn't be after doing this for 9 years, but I'm always surprised when people come to me and say, you know, my pastor never talks about abortion. We don't have anything pro-life going on in our churches. And it's really appalling to me because over 60% of women who have abortions are church-going Christians. And it's because of our silence. You know, that's why they feel like they can't go to the church. That's why they feel like the church isn't a safe space for them to go. And so, you know, we as believers, we need to get involved in the pro-life movement. We need to be bringing this topic to our pastors, you know, asking them to talk about abortion, asking them to do a call for healing. There are women in your congregations who have, and men, who have been touched by abortion in some way, and they need to know that Jesus is there, that he forgives them, that he wants to be in a relationship with them. We need local pregnancy centers need volunteers, they need donations, they need people there helping. We need people standing out in front and praying, not protesting, but praying in front of abortion facilities. Anywhere abortions are happening, Christians should have a response of hope and love. But we're just not seeing that happen all over the country in most places. And it really boggles the mind. If you really believe that an unborn child is being unjustly killed in the womb, then the response from Christians must be one of urgency. And we must be involved everywhere that we can be.
Abby, I'm on your website, which is abbyjohnson.org, and there's a link here that says Planned Parenthood director quits after watching abortion on ultrasound miracle at Planned Parenthood. Of course, you click on that link and it doesn't go anywhere, unfortunately. So, can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, just about the ultrasound that I watched, or
Just about the idea that you saw this video, and I'm feeling so much pain for this moment, and I know that's part of the movie Unplanned as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And those words are just so powerful that there's and your ministry is so strong. I'm just feeling like a big cheerleader for you right now. And you've got 500 abortion workers talked out of their business because the Planned Parenthood director quit because she saw the reality of what's going on. When are the rest of us going to just really wake up and Do more.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it is a frustration, and I, you know, I definitely feel that frustration as well. I think that people have just said, well, I'm going to let somebody else handle that. That's for this group of people. That's for that group of people. But, you know, 1 in 3 women having abortions, there are 1 in 3 women having abortions in our country. And with the majority of them being Christian women, I mean, this should be something that really activates us and spurs us to action. But, you know, I tell people, if people could just see what I saw, if they could just see the 13-week-old baby moving away from the abortion instruments, trying to preserve his life, everybody would be active in this movement.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would be doing everything they could to save the lives of these little ones. You know, but then on the other hand, it's like, well, I don't want you to see that because it was a terrible thing to watch.
You're right.
But it shouldn't take that to get Christians involved in fighting for God's children.
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple minutes left, Abby. Maybe because there have been so many people in the church, Christians who have had abortions, you've got a word to share with them.
Yeah, you know, people who have suffered from an abortion, it's important that we receive healing. I'm a person who's also had 2 abortions in my life, and coming to a place of healing was very important. It was very important for my relationship with Christ. I felt like there was some sort of wall between me and God, and I just couldn't break through it. I knew he had forgiven me, but I didn't feel like I could forgive myself, and how could he really forgive me, and all these questions in my mind. And so going through that healing process and naming my baby and memorializing my baby and just bringing tribute to the life that was is so important. It's so important for people to go through that process.
Yeah. All right, just a minute left. When does the movie come out?
Movie comes out March 29th.
Okay.
It's a wide release, so it'll be in the majority of theaters, and people can go to unplannedfilm.com to get more information.
All right. Abby Johnson, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's a hard topic, but
I appreciate
the way you handled it. All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back, Rob Bluey, my Washington, D.C. correspondent, will be with us. Be back in just about a minute and a half. Welcome back. It is 31 minutes after the hour. Rob Bluey is my guest. He is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com to check out the website. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Bill. It's good to be with you.
Are you broadcasting today from the home bunker?
We are, yes. Sounds like we're both on opposite ends of this storm.
So how have you instructed your family to stay quiet while you're on the phone with me?
Well, I have my 9-year-old son listening in right next to
cool.
me and in the office here. So,
what's his name?
The other one's practicing piano.
Nice. What's your son's name that's listening?
This is Ben.
Hey, Ben. How are you? Good to see you. All right. Let's get Dad to work here. Let's first of all talk about the storm, because we're all in the middle of some kind of misery right now.
Country in some way or another. Yeah, so in Washington, we just have sleet, freezing rain, some snow. They sent us home early today, and some of the schools all closed here. But, you know, look, business goes on in Washington. There's a, we're counting down the days here until the next shutdown threat looms. So,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of hard work to be done. And you better believe that in the Capitol, there is a lot of discussion about how to figure out and get us to a point where we don't go through another 35-day shutdown.
Right. And I know that the State of the Union address is back on for Feb 5. And I know that President Trump definitely wanted to be in the House chamber. And who wouldn't? Or you get a standing ovation every 18 seconds.
That's right. Well, next Tuesday when we talk, Bill, we'll be talking about that and probably some of the themes that we expect to hear from the president a week from today. It's really great, I think, that he has the opportunity to do this. I was thinking that Pelosi may want to delay it until they get a permanent deal in place, but I'm grateful that we can at least set aside some of those differences and give everybody a chance. Of course, the Democrats have picked Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor of Georgia, to be their response, so you'll have a relative newcomer on the Democratic Party scene, at least on the national stage, making her her big debut. And look, you can expect that the president's going to use this as an opportunity to talk about border security and immigration. I mean, those are the signature themes of his 2016 campaign, and they continue to be the things animating him today.
Mm-hmm. Stacey Abrams better not take a sip of water during her response.
That's right. It seems that more often than not, these people who give the response to the State of the Union find themselves politically challenging circumstances. You recall Bobby Jindal never seemed to recover from his.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio, of course, had the water situation.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So when you are looking at the landscape of what's going on with the shutdown, now it's back on, with the threat of it shutting down again, how are you parsing out who's winning, who's losing, who's up, who's down? How does it look from your perspective in Washington?
Well, it's really interesting because it seems in some ways, based on some of the polling that I've seen, that it's really hardened support for each of the camps. So, for instance, the Trump supporters have become even more dug in supporting the president and his beliefs. And certainly Nancy Pelosi has solidified the support of Democrats. You remember that Pelosi, not too long ago, didn't even have the votes to become speaker. She had to strike a deal in which she promised that she would not, there would be an end to her time in leadership. And now it seems that the entire party is rallying around her and support. So I'm not sure where the independents quite fall in all of this. I imagine they don't like to see the government shut down, and they'd like to see Washington get back to doing a functioning job of keeping things operating. But I think that they also recognize through this, because so much of the focus was on border security, and as President Trump put it, the humanitarian security crisis on our border, that issue was elevated to a certain extent that it's really helped propel it to a new level that maybe even during the campaign it didn't warrant that level of media attention. So Bill, you know, it's ultimately going to be probably a fight that I don't expect there to be a conclusion here where there's $5.7 billion for a wall, but perhaps there's a trade that the president's willing to make to get something in exchange for not closing down the government yet again.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I find it interesting that there's already getting to be a crowded field of candidates on the Democratic side. I find it interesting that Kamala Harris has a rally, and she gets 20,000 people. Is that something she can sustain, or do you think that's too much too soon? What do you think?
Well, I think there are a few factors there. 20,000 people in Oakland, California is her home turf, a city that I think supported Hillary Clinton, 95% to 5% for Donald Trump. It's not exactly the middle of Iowa. So I think she was rallying in a place that was familiar territory. And obviously, you want to have that strong turnout at the start of any endeavor like this. Is it sustainable? You know, I think there's going to be so many people. It's going to be such a crowded field. Already is. That it's really going to come probably down to less about the optics of how many people turn out to rallies, but what policy ideas are really inspiring and motivating people to come out and vote. And I think that that's how it should be, Bill, because I think we really want to debate on the issues and the challenges that our country faces. And the less it's on personalities and some of the mudslinging that we've seen in the past, and the more it's on the policy issues and certainly the record that Donald Trump has accumulated over his first couple of years in office, I think that's probably a better choice for the American people.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Starbucks founder, Schultz, he is thinking about getting in as an independent. And, of course, now there's all kinds of, we're going to boycott Starbucks because he would be bad for the Democratic Party.
Well, and yes, there's that, and also he's come out already swinging at Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren for some of the proposals that they've made.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's on health care or taxing the rich, you can go down the list. I think that he is trying to stake out a position that's going to be difficult to stake out. As we talked about earlier, you seem to have two camps, the conservatives and the liberals, and those people who are in the middle are trying to decide, well, you know, which way do I go? And some of them obviously are going to stick with President Trump as they did in 2016. Maybe there's a middle ground for a Ross Perot type of candidate to come in and do that. But I don't know that it's a winning strategy. I just think that it might be splitting the ticket three ways, and whoever is able to get the plurality will wind up on top.
Yeah, and I think of Howard Schultz and the Starbucks CEO, and I think, well, he's certainly a businessman, and he talks about wanting to reduce the debt and all of that, and that is going to be problematic.
Yeah, I think there are some attractive characteristics that you get with the businessman, as we've seen with President Trump. They
mm-hmm.
don't approach politics the same way that most people do. And I think that was a fresh break that a lot of people wanted to see happen in Washington, D.C. I mean, you remember right from the start the drain the swamp message that President Trump embodied. I think another businessman comes along. Obviously, you know, it's it might be a slightly different. I think Michael Bloomberg's trying to explore this as well. Like, is there space for him to run in a field, or do the American people want something completely new and different as a contrast to what we have today? And that's going to be a question the Democrats are going to have to debate and decide in their primary election.
Mm-hmm. Rob, now that we are where we're at in this, you know, we're still quite a ways away from 2020, but you start to see some polls come up, and I'm starting to wonder, I've kind of lost some confidence in polling and pollsters. Is that for good reason?
You know, I interviewed one of those pollsters this week, Bill.
Which
we
one?
Scott Rasmussen was on our Daily Signal podcast yesterday, and we had a great conversation, and I asked him the very question that you just asked me. And, you know, he says that the polls aren't necessarily inaccurate. I mean, he looks, even goes back to 2016 and says, you know, if you look at the national popular vote, the polls didn't really have it all that wrong. The problem was that people lost focus of the Electoral College, and they didn't necessarily do a good enough job looking at some of those Midwestern states where President Trump pulled out a surprise. So, I mean, I think there can always be excuses or reasons why things don't necessarily come out the way we expect after looking at polls. But for the most part, I mean, a lot of people predicted that Republicans would retain control of the Senate and lose the House, and that's what happened. I also think that we're adjusting to our changing behavior. You know, very few people, maybe with the exception of me, who still has a home phone, you know, are even answering polling questions via phone. I mean, so much of it's done online now that's the way that people, you know, are sharing information and responding to pollsters. But there are some interesting trends in polls that I think do inform some of the, you know, the policies and issues that we pursue. And one of them, Bill, what I'm concerned about is this embrace of socialism. I mean, you've seen it on the left and with young people in particular, and now there's a clear majority of people who prefer socialism in the Democratic Party over capitalism, and I think that that's a scary trend.
Why do you think that is the way it is, Rob? I mean, what people are interested in having the government control them?
I think that there's a misunderstanding about what socialism is. I think for those of us who grew up either during the Soviet Union or at the tail end of the Soviet Union, understood what that looked like, what communism and socialism and state control and the lack of freedom meant for people, because we saw those images and grew up with them. I think for people who are millennials or younger, they might not necessarily understand that because there aren't as many clear-cut examples. I mean, you see it in some places like Venezuela, but then there have been attempts to say that Denmark, for instance, is a socialist country, when in fact it has one of the freest economies in the world. So there's a clear misunderstanding about what those terms mean, and I think people like Bernie Sanders have embraced terms like democratic socialism, and they've tried to make it popular, and some people buy it.
Hmm. All right, Rob Louie is my guest. We're going to take a little break. He is the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. It's a great website. I really encourage you to go to dailysignal.com and check it out. We'll be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I've got Rob Bluey on the studio line. He also has his son Ben with him alongside. They're having a home day because of the weather in Washington, D.C. And if you're like most of us throughout the upper Midwest and parts of the East, you are suffering from some nasty weather. And we're all kind of huddling together and doing the best we can to just stay warm. And Rob, as I was thinking of some of the things that I see being motivated by the Democratic Party, they want to strike, so help you God, from the oath taken in front of the key House committee. What do you think?
That's right.
What do you think of that?
Yeah. Surprising story. I honestly did not expect to see this. But that's the reality of the world that we live in today. And I mean, I think it's really sad and unfortunate that something like the oath that somebody would say before they testify in Congress would come under a debate like this. But, you know, it seems that there's a certain anti-religion sentiment among the left, and they will do anything in their power to try to strip it from public life. And so you really, again, you see this contrast where there's been an increase in some states wanting to actually teach the Bible in public schools. And then here you have a contrast where in Washington, D.C., they want to remove a few words from the oath that you would take because it has a reference like that in it.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the schools are returning to reading the Bible and letting students read the Bible for what for good reasons. And the president said this is great. And of course, he got ripped apart for that, didn't he?
He certainly did, and it's not surprising. I'm glad that he elevated the issue, though. And of course, you know, this is happening. This is why we elect people to represent us. I mean, they share the values, and then they go to their state capitals and they pursue this legislation. And in some cases, it might make it to the governor's desk for a signature. In other cases, it might not. But this is why you have the kind of republic that we live in for these kind of debates. And I don't think there's anything personally wrong with it. I mean, as you and I've talked about in the past, I mean, we're a church-going family, and our kids are exposed to religion, and, you know, we believe in Christ, and, you know, those are all important values to us, but, you know, I think that if you want to offer it as an elective class in school, it would. I only see the benefits of that.
Yeah,
I mean,
too.
I think there are so many important lessons that you can learn from that. Some people might view it as a secular study and not a religious study. And you know, I mean, Bill, I mean, I just think that at this day and age, we need more of those lessons that come from the Bible, not less of them.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I'm just curious, because if in 3 weeks negotiations don't work out between the president and the Democrats regarding his request for border money, I'm just curious as to what you think he is going to do, and what do you think the outcome is going to be, and who's going to pay some consequences?
Well, Bill, it seems that the two big options on the table, which really are in some ways diametrically opposed to each other, but I'll lay them out for your listeners. The one option is that the president declares a national emergency, in which case he would he's already done this three times. There are actually 31 active national emergency declarations currently active. So it's an uncommon thing for somebody to do. It might be uncommon in this case. But he would declare the national emergency and then proceed to do this from his executive branch authority. There's no doubt that that would be challenged in the court of law, much like the travel ban was early on in his presidency. So there are some hurdles to actually accomplishing it, but that's one route he could take. The other, which appears to be supported by Vice President Pence and Jared Kushner and others in the White House, is that you strike a big immigration deal in which you maybe grant amnesty to up to 10 million illegal immigrants in exchange for a wall. We've seen this happen before. Ronald Reagan, of course, in 1986 did something similar. What happened is people got amnesty, but then they never followed through on the border security measures. So, you know, there are some perils to go down that road, and maybe there's a middle ground in there, but those are the two kind of competing ideas that we're hearing about today.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. So what else is on your desk? What are the issues you're facing that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I wanted to make sure your listeners knew about one of our most important products at the Heritage Foundation. It's an index that measures economic freedom of each country throughout the world. And I think it's significant for this reason. This is now really the first year we've been able to measure in totality the effect of the Trump administration on this issue. And the United States actually jumped from 18th place in the world. We have, believe it or not, we have slipped to 18 on the list. This year, we jumped to number 12. So significant gains, and that's because of the deregulation that we've seen come out of Washington and the tax cuts that have provided more freedom and more money in the pockets of Americans. So really good news on that score. And Bill, at a time when we talk about so much bad news, it seems, I know you and I try to always focus back on the good.
Well, we always look for it.
But we know that so many others in the media tend not to. I think that the thing that really struck me, at no other time in history have people around the globe had as much freedom and opportunity as they do today. And that's a really great thing. And so despite the challenges and struggles that people endure, I think that there is hope out there. And by giving them this freedom to do and live their lives in a way that they can become prosperous is a truly wonderful and great thing.
Mm-hmm. Just before you, Rob, I had Abby Johnson on. She worked at a Planned Parenthood clinic for 8 years and then saw a procedure that changed her position. Now she's a pro-life advocate. And I was thinking of the celebration that went on the floor in New York when they extended the abortion to really full term. And what was your response to that? Because I got sick to my stomach.
Well, as a native New Yorker, same here. I mean, I couldn't believe it. This might be the values of New York City liberals, but certainly not the people that I grew up with in upstate New York. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of people in New York who are also sick about what took place there and doing their best to try to reverse course. You know, Bill, it's this is, again, I think people don't understand. We just published a piece on the Daily Signal this week. It said, you know, would people feel the same way about abortion if they looked at it in the eyes of a toddler whose life that you were taking? And the answer, of course, would be no. People are advocating so much for those who, come from all different lifestyles and have disabilities, and you know, we support those efforts. But, you know, when it comes to the unborn child, they don't have that same perspective. And you just have to wonder, how can we connect with these people? And so we had Abby on our Daily Signal podcast recently, and
cool.
She tells just a remarkable story. I'm so glad that you had her on the show today, because it is a heart-changing, life-changing experience that she certainly went through. And I think the more people hear about that and hear her story and watch the movie that she's promoting, I mean, those are the things that I think really will change minds. And we just had the March for Life in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
What's so encouraging is to see how many young people, the future generation, are believing in the pro-life cause.
Mm-hmm. That's I'm really glad that you had her on the podcast. I'll have to go listen to that. Did you get a chance to interview her yourself?
I didn't. My colleague Rachel Del Judas interviewed her, and so it was a really great interview. And look, you know, this is one of those things, Bill. I think you know, those of us who are working media and have the opportunity to share these stories. I mean, this is what motivates me and what drives me every day is to tell these powerful stories of people like Abby, and hopefully to change hearts and minds out there of people like your listeners.
Mm-hmm. When I was reading about the IRS, and I found this interesting, I wanted to ask your take on this. With the government shutdown, did it last 35 days, Rob? Was that the total number of days, 35?
It did go 35, yes.
It said that the IRS would require a full year of work to catch up. Does that sound reasonable to you?
It doesn't sound reasonable, but I'm not necessarily surprised. Look, you know, I think that there are a lot of inefficiencies in government, and if hopefully, if anything, that this shutdown exposes, there may be some efforts that need to be closely looked at if anything comes of it. But yeah, look, there are certainly some factors that I think we need to take into account when it comes to these next 3 weeks, and we don't want to find ourselves in another situation with a shutdown, because I also saw that from the Congressional Budget Office estimates, Bill, how much economic activity was lost as a result of the shutdown. Well, certainly that's not doing Americans any good. Even if we don't like government, we don't want Americans suffering from the lack of economic activity. So let's hope that we can find some resolution here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Rob, Nicolas Maduro, okay, What a crazy weird guy, huh?
Oh, I mean, it's just remarkable what we're seeing happen in Venezuela. You know, again, look, this is a situation where President Trump, I don't think, gets enough credit as he deserves on the foreign policy front, taking a clear stand here with the opposition in Venezuela to bring an end to what happened with Maduro. I mean, his policies have, and Hugo Chavez's policies have decimated that country. And we go back to economic freedom. I mean, let's just talk about that for a moment. I mean, Venezuela used to be one of the richest and most prosperous countries in that region, and then today it's the exact opposite. I mean, the people there are struggling, they're suffering, and his policies are not helping at all.
Well, they're starving and then killing each other, literally for food. You know, the average Venezuelan has lost 11 pounds. There's just no food there.
Exactly. No, I mean, it is really sad, and I think that there's an opportunity now for there to be change, and we can really just hope, pray for the people there who are suffering. I mean, it is not a good situation. And, Bill, I just looked up the numbers, and Venezuela, of the 180 countries that we rank on our Index of Economic Freedom at the Heritage Foundation, mm-hmm. Venezuela is number 179.
Wow.
180, the last on the list, is North Korea.
Oh,
that
my.
Is how bad the situation is in Venezuela.
Wow. There's a big endorsement for socialism.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Cuba, Venezuela, and North Korea are at the bottom of the list. What does that tell you about socialism?
Yeah. Tells you it's not good. So are you and Ben going to watch the Super Bowl Sunday?
I think we certainly are.
Nice.
We're Pittsburgh Steelers fans, though.
I know that.
So,
yeah.
we're probably going to pull for the L.A. Rams.
Okay.
Simply to hope Tom Brady doesn't get that number six.
Yeah. Thanks for doing the show today, Rob. Always great talking to you. And
good
have
to
a
talk
great
to
weekend.
You, Bill.
Yep. Rob Louie's been my guest, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. You can head over to dailysignal.com to learn more about Rob's website. Be back in a minute.
Faith Radio is a media outreach of University of Northwestern St. Paul. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and to nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We do that by providing relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching, along with interactive talk programming that helps you in your daily life and points us all back to Jesus. You can also find helpful articles and podcast links for many topics on our website, myfaithradio.com.
I want to thank all of my guests today. Dr. Mark Muska, who came in. I think we're going to change that from Ask the Professor to Hey Mark, because so many great questions, and I just want to grill him when he comes in. And let's not be formal. Get your questions, and if you missed any of that, you're going to want to go hear it. It's really been a great hour. And Abby Johnson, what a story. I have to tell you, it kind of took me off my place a little bit just to hear what she went through, what she experienced. It's even just difficult to talk about, and it's be something I'll be thinking about the rest of the day. And then Rob Louie, always a favorite. I just love Rob, and I love his perspective, and I can just tell he's got a smile on his face when he's talking. I can just tell. Just that guy. Anyway, that wraps up the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting Faith Radio. Just remember that God loves you, and that when you lay your head on the pillow, just trust him for your rest. And remember, he's writing his story in your life. All right? I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.